All right, good morning, everybody. Good morning, and welcome to your Fab Finance. We also have a brand new live stream, so it's probably the good kind of live stream, not the bad kind of live stream that you see sometimes on the internet. My name is Blythe Behrens. I am a financial solutions advisor with Bank of America and Merrill. I work here in Boston, and I'll be your MC for this breakout session. I am thrilled to be here to support the advancement of women leaders from across the state and to support this community. At Bank of America, we invest in helping women make meaningful contributions within our company and in our communities. Our ongoing work includes our focus on being a great place to work for our female employees, and I can attest to that, making the financial lives better of our female clients and our customers in general, and advancing economic empowerment of women around the world. We are proud to be a partner of the Massachusetts Conference for Women. We believe in investing in women, and investing in women is an investment in the future. And while we're waiting to get some slides up, I just want to take some little more personal time and say that how excited I am as somebody who's been in the investment industry since 1990 and was first told when I interviewed back in 91 with a company that women who wear pants don't get promoted, that I love wearing pants now to the office. I have been promoted, and I have to say that I have met some wonderful both male and female mentors along the way. And one thing that some of the mentors I've had at the bank have really helped me do is create a brand where I do a lot of outreach, just like Tanya is going to be talking about later, when it comes to talking to people about their personal finances. Because let's face it, I don't know how many of you in this room, when you got out of school, did you know how to write a check? Do any of you even have checkbooks? There are basic things when it comes to managing your finances that we are not taught. And I can say from experience, women have usually been on the back burner when it comes to knowing what goes on with their personal finance. So I think it's really important that we have women like Tanya here to talk about that. And that is my personal mission, is to make sure, especially when I meet with people, that every woman and every person that walks out the door, but especially women, really have a good grip on their financial future, because if you don't, you're not in control of your own life. And I think Tanya can attest to that as well. So, I think it's really wonderful to see all of the women here, how far we've come in this industry, and how far the conversation about talking about your own personal financial lives has really changed over time. And I really love working for an organization that allows me to do that, not only with employees at the bank, with customers, but also in the community, because we have the knowledge, let's share it with people. So how are we doing for time there, Tanya? Are we doing all right? So so my own personal journey, I'll just fill you in a bit, is that I am happily divorced. However, my ex-husband took advantage of me, shall we say, and it can be very debilitating, and it can be very, really work on your psyche. So as time has gone on and I've been able to sort of rebuild my financial picture, there's some lessons I've learned along the way, and as I go on now, I'm trying to teach my daughter the lessons that I've learned so she doesn't make the same mistakes that I have made. And one thing that I think is really challenging, especially for millennials, is things like streaming services, where you forget that, you've got a subscription to this or that, and before you know it, you're spending $150 on all these subscriptions that you forgot. And I'll tell you a story. My daughter is 15. I love her dearly. And she was at camp this summer, and she wrote me a letter saying, "Mom, I'm having a wonderful time at camp. Great people here, but I'm really worried about my banking and my debt. And I'll tell you why I'm in this predicament when I see you in 2 weeks." And I thought, that's a really strange thing for a 15-year-old to be thinking about while she's at camp. And I have a joint bank account with her, and I saw, sure enough, it was her Spotify subscription that hit, and she didn't have enough money in her checking account. And she was panicked, and her friend said, yes, all she kept talking about while she was here at camp was her bank account. She was really worried about that and what she would do. So that was really the first lesson for her in managing finances. And I said, well, you really need to take a look at what you're spending, where the money's going, and making sure that you have enough. And so she said, oh, man, I had no idea. And I'm really glad that she learned that lesson at 15, but it made me think about all that we have and how technology can be a wonderful thing, but it can also be something that makes us spend a little bit more than we realize. I will say on an app for a coffee company, I'll get, hey, if you buy 3 lattes this week, you get a free latte. I'm like, great! I buy 3 lattes to get that one free. I only needed 1 latte that week. I didn't need 4. But it's just getting you excited to do that, and it hooks you, and you don't even realize it. And I'm a pretty smart person, but it does make you think about how we can juggle things like technology, streaming services, mobile apps, Uber, all of those things in our lives, and not let our money get away from us. So I think maybe, Tanya, we might want to turn this into a fireside chat at this point. We're going to roll with the presentation? Okay. So we're still waiting. We've got some technical difficulties. Technology can be a curse and a blessing sometimes, as you know. So, I'll just talk a little bit longer about, you're good? Okay, so we're going to stop now listening to me, and we are going to turn this over to Tanya, who I have so enjoyed meeting this morning. She is also passionate about her finances and empowering other women when it comes to their finances. She has a beautiful little boy. She knows what it's like to juggle a bunch of things. She has to juggle marriage, which I don't have to, thank God. But she also is she calls herself a mompreneur. And a little fact that you may not know is that she just bought her first company. It is a subscription loofah company, and it is fascinating. So I'm going to turn this over to Tanya to talk about your fab financial life. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello. Good morning, Boston. I'm excited to be here. It's a little cold. I live in Los Angeles, so yeah. Thank you so much for coming to this session. You never know how interested people are going to be in their finances, but I'm so grateful that you all are interested in your finances because money runs everything. And so I have a question for you as we get started. And that question is, are my slides working? Okay, oops. Let's hold that, okay? Hold that thought. What is your first money-related memory? I want you to think about that. Because typically when I ask people this question, what their first money-related memory is, they often think that it is, the first time they got their first paycheck. And the first time I was asked this question, I immediately thought of my first paycheck. I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina. I worked at a grocery store called Winn-Dixie in high school. And Winn-Dixie, as southern as it gets. And my first job was as a grocery bagger. And I got this job because I loved sneakers. I still love sneakers. After this presentation, I'm going to put them on, and you'll probably see me in the expo hall in my sneakers. But I wanted to buy an expensive pair of sneakers, and my parents, who were both in the military, refused to buy them. And so they said, well, if you want those sneakers, you have to get a job. So I went and got a job. And my first paycheck was about $200. The sneakers were $160. And so I didn't have much left over, but that was my first, I thought it was my first money memory, but my actual first money memory happened a lot earlier than that. And it was when I was in elementary school. And so my mother and father, they're both in the military. So I say Charlotte, North Carolina is home, but I've lived all over, the Philippines, Germany. At this point, we were living in Oklahoma City. Has anyone in here been to Oklahoma? just a few people. It's not exactly, you know, a destination. But I lived in Oklahoma City, and I was one of the only black little girls in the class, let alone the entire grade and the school. But up until that point, I had a well-adjusted childhood. I had lots of friends. I was a social butterfly. My mom always said she couldn't keep me at home. I loved talking. And so I lived a normal, you know, normal life. But this time I was in the cafeteria. I had gotten my tray and I walked in. And it was first, you know, seat where you can, where you find a seat. And so I walked and I went to sit down at the first open seat that I saw. And it was next to this young man in my class named James. I don't remember James' last name, but I can actually, I can see James. James had sandy brown hair. His skin was, it was tinted. You could tell, now in retrospect, you can tell that James probably was a child who came from a home where there were a few difficulties and so forth because of the behavioral issues he exemplified in our class, but he was just my classmate at that age. And I went to sit down next to him, and James stopped talking to his friends, about three or four other classmates, and looked at me and said, "I don't want to sit next to her. She has crap all over her." And I was heartbroken. I just stood there, and I was like, "Well, my head, what am I gonna do? I'm gonna leave him sit. I guess I'm gonna sit next to James." And he continued to sit with his back towards me. And for me, that was the first time I was made to feel different. And when I think about my money story, I realize how much that impacted me, because I did not want to feel different ever again. I wanted to blend in with others. I wanted to feel like I was accepted. And so that took me from being this young woman who was this little girl with the ponytails and bright and bushy tail to this little girl you see on the next slide, in the next picture, who has, you know, a side bang. I tell my mom, "I can't do these ponytails anymore. I can only wear silk shirts and I need a name necklace. I need to fit in." This is, you know, and I started to dress and look for approval through my appearance. Now, to this day, I like clothes. I use Rent the Runway. But I found ways to be financially responsible when it comes to my lack of clothes. But for this young woman, I didn't understand that. And I carried this experience with me well into adulthood. And when I started my Fab Finance in 2013, it required me to ask myself, what is your first memory as it pertains to money? Because that memory affects how you relate to money. And so when we think about becoming financially fabulous, becoming financially free is about how you think about your money and what you do with your money. So as a financial educator, I'm not your everyday financial educator. I'm not going to sit in here and talk to you guys about credit and understanding your credit score and how to create a budget. This is only a 45-minute workshop, and I don't have time for that. And it takes a little long, it takes a little more than that. But what I do want to make sure that we do is we create space for you to ask your financial questions, because I think that I can create the best presentation in the world that any financial person has ever seen. But if I'm not addressing or answering your questions, then I feel like it's a waste of time. So I want to make sure I leave time for a conversation amongst us so you can ask your questions of me about your, about money. But then also, I want to spend more time talking about the behaviors and the habits that lead to most people's lack of living their financial best life. And that starts with our first money story. And so I want to invite someone. When I ask you that question, I would love someone to share what came to mind when I ask, what is your first memory as it relates to money? Someone brave. I right back here with the red shirt on. Do you mind coming to the podium and sharing? Yes, let's clap for her. Because this might be the first person to volunteer today. So, yes. can we? I think I might have thrown him for a curveball. Sorry, guys. Just been throwing curveballs all morning.
Well, I can talk loud.
Yeah. Oh,
there we go.
And I can repeat it.
So my first money experience, so I grew up in small town Iowa. So we still had the five and dime sort of thing when I was little. I think I was about 7 or 8 years old. And I wanted to get my brother for Christmas a bottle of Old Spice because I just loved the smell. And he was, you know, my, you know, I looked up to him. So I come out of, that's all I had. I just had money to buy the Old Spice and walked out of the store and it dropped. It fell. And it, it broke. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't have any more money. And it's, you know, I was all upset. And someone saw me on the street, again, small town Iowa, I gotta love nice people. And they brought me back in the store so I could buy another bottle, and they paid for it.
Wow.
So I could have the Christmas present for my brother.
That's a wonderful first experience, because that teaches you generosity, right?
True.
And do you consider yourself a generous person to this day?
I hope so.
Thank you so much.
I was generous driving in today. How's that?
Thank you so much for sharing that. But then, yes, let's clap for her. And we have a bird in the room.
Bird? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and the bird is gone. Okay. Maybe we can shut the door so the bird doesn't come back. And so thank you so much for sharing that. When I'm working with clients and so forth, when I think about their money story and I'm asking them questions, you know, something as wonderful and as positive as that, then we can also think about, what did you want to use the money for? You wanted to use it to buy a gift, and you wanted to use it to buy something for someone. And a lot of times when we're thinking about our financial habits and our behaviors and the things that contribute to our financial issues, sometimes it's not the things we buy ourselves. Sometimes it's the things that we buy others. As a parent, I find myself spending more money on my son than I would ever spend on myself. And so thinking about, is my first memory of money related to me buying things for other people? And is that something that I continue to do to this day? But I think generosity is important, and I believe in, you know, sharing. But it's just also important to kind of think down, what did this tell my younger self also in generosity? And so our current relationship with money is often rooted in a variety of experiences. And I want to share with you all a few experiences that when I did this exercise, I began to realize my relationship with money was rooted in. It wasn't just that classroom with James. It was that cafeteria. It was the fear of not having enough. It was sacrificing happiness for years of security. And that one actually ended up coming from my parents, who were in the military. And growing up, all I heard them say was, 20 years, 20 years. When we get to 20 years, it almost felt like they couldn't necessarily live their life until they retired at 20 years. So as a result, I decided I don't want to work in a job where I have to wait for 20 years to enjoy my life. And started to look for other opportunities. It was safe to spend or work to spend, financial dependence on a man. I created a family tree. And some of these are all the lessons I learned from other family members. So this financial dependence on a man was something that I actually didn't want to experience, because my grandmother never worked outside of the home a day in her life, and she was financially dependent on my grandfather. And I did not want to be financially dependent on a man, but also in the other end, it made me so financially independent that it almost became hard to live with me. And that's something that I had to work on, cohabitating and maintaining my independence without the fear of not having independence. And then also the appearance of financial security is more important than financial security. Definitely grew up with that belief, because it's the Joneses, right? You know, my parents like nice cars. And I particularly remember an experience where my parents both had nice cars in the driveway. My father had lost his job, and my mother had to cash my savings bonds to pay the bills. And I was like, here we are with these luxury vehicles in the driveway, and we can't even pay our bills if an emergency happens. And so I began to realize now as a financial educator that my parents actually, you know, they're great at saving money. But for me, it told me that it was more important to look the part than actually be the part. And then another lesson I learned, you're always in competition, and that you can't trust others. That cost is more important than quality. And the American dream should be your dream. And these are all things that I had to reprogram myself when it came to the money story. And I want you to think about, what are the lessons that you not only learned on your own, but what are the lessons that other people in your life taught you? I want you to think, and so this is a workshop. And so I want you to think about the most impactful person in your life, whether that is an educator, whether that is a parent, a grandparent, a sibling. I want you to spend about a minute thinking about the most impactful person in your life and a money story or something that you learned from them that impacts how you relate to money today. Just a minute. And if someone has thought of that, I open it up for you to share. If someone wants to share. Yes, firsthand, back here. I just need you to walk over to a microphone. And thank you all so much for sharing. Let's give her an applause. Because we're doing financial therapy in here, and it's not always easy to share your financial laundry. So thank you.
My name's Disha. My mom has always been a big influence, not in all aspects, but in some. And what I learned from her is what not to do when you're saving money. Because she's so bad in saving money. And when I look at her, I'm like, that's not what I want to be. That's not what I want to do in terms of finances. And so when I look at my dad, he's the complete opposite. I think it's because my mom just doesn't save at all, and my dad just keeps doing it. So I think both of them together showed me what not to do. And then if you also have people in your life that are not into saving money, how you, as you know, being part of a family, how you can compensate for that. So I think from my dad, I gained how much you need to save, how you can save, and where you can cut back. And from my mom, I realized that there'll always be dresses and stuff that I really like, but sometimes I think I have to take a step back and just learn to be a little bit more contented.
Yes, thank you so much.
I also use Rent the Runway. This is from that.
Thank you. And yeah, so a lot of times we do learn what to do, and we learn what not to do from the individuals who impact and influence our finances. But no matter what you've learned from individuals and no matter what you've learned from those in your life, it is important to understand, and I think I should have another slide popping up here. It is important for you to understand that you have permission to create your own story, and you are entitled to creating your own money story. You have permission, and at MyFab Finance, our mission is to help people become financially free and break the cycle of living paycheck to paycheck so that they can do more of what they love. It is to change your story and to become your own version of fabulous, whatever that means to you. It's changing your money story. It's deciding to break whatever lessons you might have learned from others and how that's impacting your life and impacting how you manage your money. And as I was talking to Blythe before we came in here, I was saying, you know, I'm focusing more on the habits and behaviors that lend to poor financial decisions, because I feel like a lot of people that I work with, and, you know, I'm not judging anyone here, but most of the time, if you're here, sometimes it's not necessarily a income issue, it's a money management issue. And that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you. We make decisions based on the tools that we have and the resources we have available to us. But sometimes it literally is a money management issue. And I want to demonstrate that. And so I'm asking everyone to stand up. Put your bag on your chair and stand up. Because I want you to see how powerful habits can be, as well as challenging doing what we think we should be doing and not. And so I'm going to ask you three questions. When I ask you the question, if the question applies to you, if your answer or if the question you would say yes to it, then I want you to have a seat and remain seated, okay? Okay, so my first question is, how many of us in this room have knowingly exceeded the posted speed limit while driving? Okay. All right. We have a few people still standing. Generally, these are people who can't drive or aren't driving. But I have two more questions. Okay, so my second question is, how many of you have ever taken your lunch to work but went and purchased something else to eat instead? Okay. My last question is, how many of you know that you're supposed to get a dental exam every 6 months but have avoided getting that dental exam? Oh, we have a few. Did you stand back up? You stood back up, see? So we have one person standing still? Two, three. Okay, three. This is actually a record. I've never had three people still standing. But thank you so much. Well, you guys, congratulations on getting your dental exams. The reason that I ask these questions is because these are all things that we know that we should be doing. We know we shouldn't be speeding. We know that if we take our lunch to work, the purpose of taking our lunch to work is to save money or just to, you know, to reduce waste. But we also know that we should be getting our dental exams, and we don't do them on time. And that's the same thing that a lot of people do when it comes to their money. We know that saving is important. We know that investing for the future is important. We know that our credit score is going to be important. But whether it's life circumstances or whatever it may be, and that in certain moments, we act against our own best interest. We do things that aren't in our best financial interest. And oftentimes, that's because of habits and behaviors. And so the reason I say that your financial situation is not just about what you think about your money, it is what you do with your money, is because of those important behaviors. And so I'm actually going to share a few small tips that you can take away with you to help you make better financial decisions, so that going forward you can make better decisions with your money. We're not going to do a budget, but we're going to talk about these small things that you can do. And so the first one is, whenever you're buying things, I always ask myself three questions before I buy something. Usually it's in a store that starts with a T and ends with a T. I love that store. But I ask myself these three questions. It is, what would happen if I don't buy this today? What's the worst thing that would happen if you didn't buy this today? If it's, you know, there's going to be a dramatic fatal outcome, then by all means, get it. But most of the time it is, then I just won't have it. Or I, you know, I'm going to think about it when I leave the store. That is not a reason to take it with you. The second question is, do I already own something similar to this? How many of us have bought something and you get home like, oh, I kind of have this. Oh. So, but asking that question, do I already own something similar to this? Do I have something similar to this item or what I'm hoping to get from this item? The next question is, can I afford to maintain this? And so this happens, you know, these are large, most of the time, big ticket items. So, you know, I used to sell cars in college. I used to be a car saleswoman. And we would often prey on the people who were just shopping, just looking, just looking. I can't tell you how many times I sold a car to someone who was just looking. I just want to see what's available. And so asking yourself, can I afford to maintain this? Because you walked in and you bought this car, and yes, maybe you can afford the car payments, but can you afford the maintenance? Can you afford the gas? Can you afford the oil changes? Can you afford parking it? In certain cities, I know cities such as New York City and San Francisco, you actually have to pay monthly for parking. So can you afford to maintain this expense? And then moving beyond those questions, and sorry, usually I'm able to see my slides, so I'm just looking to make sure I'm on track. It is, get confrontational with your money. So maybe you're not a confrontational person, but you have to get confrontational with your money. You have to ask those hard questions that if you can't afford to have someone ask you those hard questions, ask yourself those hard questions. Print out your statement. Why did I end up purchasing this? What did this contribute to my overall financial goals? Do I even have financial goals? Get confrontational with yourself and ask yourself, am I just winging it when it comes to my money? Or am I actually being proactive when it comes to my money? And what's one thing that I could do to make myself feel that I'm being more proactive? If you feel that you haven't been proactive, then I would say regular audits. I'm going to kind of skip ahead. Regular audits of your account to avoid lifestyle creep. And so what I find most of the time, people, how many of us in here have gotten a raise at their job? You felt good, right? You're like, oh, I can breathe a little easier. No? Oh, well, hopefully the next one. Okay? But, you know, you can breathe a little easier. And then the next year comes around. And you're looking forward to another raise. Because lifestyle creep has set in. And the more you made, the more you spent. Instead of using that money and investing it or putting it aside and doing something that was working towards your financial goals. So by auditing your finances, you can get a handle on lifestyle creep before your finances get out of control. So you can say, okay, I added this. I added this expense. Oh, I was in the store and signed up for this. Oh, I was walking down the street. They asked me if I wanted this food delivery service, and I signed up for that. And now I have all these additional expenses, and now I can't figure out why I can't get ahead financially. It's because of the lifestyle creep. Your finances are creeping up to your expenses are creeping up to the state of what they once were before that raise. The next one is making savings easier and automatic. And so I'm really big on making your savings easier and automatic, but easier only one way, not easier both ways. So most of the time we open up a savings account with our primary checking institution. And that's completely fine. I know a lot of banks would like to, you know, keep your business. That's completely fine. But if you have a long-term savings goal, I always recommend creating an inconvenient savings account. So an inconvenient savings account is one that might not be the easiest to access. Maybe it's one with a local credit union or a bank that's across town that you wouldn't go to. I mean, I don't really visit brick and mortar locations anymore. So it's all kind of inconvenient, convenient for me. But I usually set up an online account, and I don't necessarily save the login information, but I have the account information. I just transfer money into that account. And so it's an inconvenient account, and I almost forget that I have that bank account. And so that I'm just saving towards, and it's not looking me in the eye on a regular basis and tempting me to buy it whenever my favorite store has a sample sale or something of that nature. Because another thing I've learned is that, Tanya, an emergency fund is not for emergency fund. That's not what it's for. And by creating the inconvenient savings account, I challenge myself whenever something happens, and I'm able to ask those three questions and ask myself, is this your version of an emergency, or is it something you just really want in this moment? The next question is maximize, maximize, maximize. So when I say maximize, maximize everything. Maximize your income earning ability. I always tell my husband, if we have free time, we can make money. If you have free time, if you can sit on the couch and watch TV, like that's the opportunity to maximize your learning, to maximize our income earning opportunity, to maximize time with our son. It's a way to we can maximize our time. Maximize your talents, because it's just, you always want to have multiple ways to bring in revenue, because you don't know what's going to happen to your primary revenue stream. But by maximizing, you're able to see what's available to you. And then the last one is reframing spending. And this was a big one for me, especially as someone who got their first job to buy things. It is remembering that you don't have to spend every last dime. And it sounds simple, but for a lot of us, if we see it there, we're going to spend it. And we're like, okay, we look at our bank account, it's like, oh, I have XYZ amount until payday. Now I can go buy this. No, it doesn't necessarily mean that. It means that maybe you should be saving that instead of spending it. So we wanted to give those practical, practical money tips. And I think, I'm not sure how much time I have left. Okay. Oh, great. Okay, so I have a little more time. So I love having financial conversations with people. And I love answering people's money questions and helping people create breakthroughs. So now I'm going to open up the floor to answer a few questions that are here in the audience, because I feel like this is a good sample size of the relative women's community. And I feel like your questions and the issues that you might be dealing with, someone else in here is dealing with it, or someone watching the live stream, high live stream, someone watching that is dealing with it. So let's get these money questions underway. And if you have a question, I guess you could line up at the podiums, at the microphones. And I'll also say, anyone has a financial question that they don't feel comfortable asking in a room full of people, after this presentation, I'll be back here by the window. I have on a animal print dress. You can't miss me. And I'll answer any questions that anyone did not feel comfortable asking in here. And if anyone has to leave really quick, I do want to share my my social media information, because you can also tweet your question to me, you can email it to me, or you can send it to me on Instagram, and that's at MyFabFinance. So for anyone who would want to ask a question that they don't feel comfortable asking publicly or can't wait to ask me. So let's start right here, and then, oh, we have one all the way over here too. Let's start here, and then I'll work my way over. Start over here.
Hi. Thank you so much for this. I really look forward to hearing from other different perspectives. So really and truly, this is my question. We talk about good debt and bad debt and saving. And mm-hmm. So I'm one of the wonderful people who came out of school with a lot of student loans. Mm-hmm. And a part of me tries to budget and manage paying off these loans, which I feel will never happen, and save. And it's the struggle of, okay, do I save, do I have an emergency fund, or mm-hmm. do I pay the student loan bill?
Got you. I think that is something that plagues a lot of people, and a lot of people are concerned with balancing debt and balancing their savings. And I always recommend that individuals focus on their savings initially. And not focusing on your savings to the point where you are negating or not paying or avoiding paying your debt, but focusing on your savings for the purpose of this is my financial goal for now. So creating that financial goal of I need to save XYZ to feel a little more comfortable. When people ask me how much they should save, generally it is, I say, you know, what's the most that you've ever saved? Let's save that. If it's $50, let's save $50 and then let's double that. And then we'll work on saving at least $1,000. Because for some people, most emergencies that they'll experience are generally $1,000 or less. But, you know, sometimes things happen outside of that, and that's why you want to save even more. But creating a savings target and focus on your saving while maybe if you have your student loans, maybe you can put them on deferment or until that you can afford to pay them back. Or maybe you can reduce your payment plan until you're able to aggressively contribute to them. But I always recommend savings, and even if you have credit card debt, to build a savings, because most of the time debt is created because of the absence of saving. And so if we're working on eliminating our debt and not putting anything towards savings, what happens the next time an emergency happens? We're creating more debt instead of actually borrowing that money from our savings. And so I always say start with building your savings and reach your initial savings goal, and then start to spread your money elsewhere once you've reached that initial savings goal.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Right here, I'm going to say one question each, and then we'll move back and forth.
Hi, my name's Holly. My question actually kind of dovetails off of what you were just speaking about, getting your savings in order first. And would you recommend having more than one savings account? Like, for example, would I have one for myself and then have another savings account for, like, my family as a whole? I have two young children. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So, you know, savings accounts typically are free. So, yes, I definitely do recommend multiple savings accounts because it allows you to kind of put a name on that savings account. So one of my colleagues in personal finance, her name is Paulette Perak. She has something she calls the F-off fund. And that's what she actually named her account because she gave a name to her goal. And a lot of times we don't give a name or we don't identify our goal. And so she gave a name to the goal, and that was her savings account name. When I wanted to resign from my job, when I decided I didn't want to work for anyone else, I named my savings account my flight fund. And so I had an emergency savings account, and then I had my flight fund. And then me and my husband had our household savings account. So I definitely do suggest having multiple savings accounts. And sometimes it can be with the same institution. Sometimes it can be with different institutions. I don't necessarily get into the nuances of interest rates and so forth, because let's be honest, we're really probably not going to get rich on, you know, our $5,000 and, you know, a set aside savings account. But it is helpful for creating boundaries around that money and saying, okay, I use this for this purpose and I use that for this purpose. Only thing is you want to make sure you're also keeping detailed records of your savings accounts and those passwords and having access to that information, because me and my husband are in the home buying process, and that's been really fun, pulling up all my savings accounts and all my different bank accounts that I have. But personally, I have four different savings accounts. So yeah, I definitely do suggest having multiple savings accounts for your different goals.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking that. Yes.
Hello. My name is Yawande. I also follow you on Twitter, and she's awesome. So follow her, guys.
Oh,
she does have great advice. So my question is, I am a child of immigrants. And it's more so like a mindset or, you know, beliefs that you've been taught. And a lot of it's taking care of your parents, even when they are still able to take care of themselves, you know, asking for $5,000, for example. So how would you, I know this may be like a deeper even question, but what are some of those ways to approach that or, you know, manage those expectations of taking care of people? You know what I mean? When you're really just trying to set yourself up and then be able to take care of others later?
I'm happy you asked that question, because that is, I'll talk a lot about financial boundaries. And that is often one of the biggest boundaries that we have to create, especially, I find, for women. It's creating boundaries between your family and your finances. And it's not always an easy conversation to have. But what you don't want to do is set the precedent where you become the bank for someone else.
Right.
Because oftentimes, if they don't have to find their own solutions, and maybe, you know, parents are different, kids are, everyone in our lives are different, but they don't have to find their own solutions, they look to you as their financial solution. And if you're their financial solution, then how are you your own financial solution? And as a parent, I realized that one of the biggest gifts that I can give my son is to be financially secure. My financial security is a gift to him. So me deciding, no, we're not going to do this because I'm putting the money in your 529 plan, or because I'm putting the money aside for your future, or because I'm putting the money aside for my future, is actually a gift to him. And I start by saying that because a lot of times we have parents in the room who just want to give their child the experience that they never had and give them all the things that they never had. But you have to ask yourself, are you giving your child the gift of your financial freedom? Because that is a gift to them so that they don't have to worry about covering your costs or taking care of you when they should be focusing on getting themselves together financially. So when it comes to lending money to family or lending money to parents, it's a case-by-case scenario. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to think about what you're willing to do and what you're willing to allow to happen and what are the other opportunities. Maybe it is, you know, maybe it's not as dire as someone possibly getting evicted. Maybe it's something small. It's like, oh, I want something, not I need something. So I make it, if you're going to loan money, loan for want and for needs, not want. If you're going to lend anyone money or lend a family member money, ask them, is this a need, or determine yourself, is this a need or is it a want? Is it, you need a, you know, is it a medical expense, or is it, you know, do you need money for food, or is it that you just want to take a vacation back home? And like, that's not something that I'm willing to fund. And finding ways to communicate with people. And so one of the things that I found has been most effective for my clients is when they're asked, when a family member asks them to borrow money, especially the holiday season, clarify to them what your financial goals are. A few years ago, my little sister did this. She wanted to buy her first house. And so she was like, so I just want you all to know that no one in here is getting gifts because I'm saving to buy my first home. And it's like, what do you say to that? No, don't buy your home. Buy me a watch instead. Like, what do you say to that? And by stating your financial goals and say, hey, I understand that, you know, this would really help you, but right now I'm working towards this. Right now I'm working towards eliminating all of my credit card debt. Right now I'm working towards eliminating my student loan debt because they keep calling me and I'm tired of having these conversations. Right now I'm working on moving into my first place or purchasing my first home. Right now I'm working on relocating. I'm saving money so that I can relocate to a place that feeds me, or so that I can, you know, start my own business so that I can create more wealth for our family. So it's thinking about what your financial goals are. And when you say no because of this. Say no because I'm working towards this. It makes it more convincing. But then also, if you don't have a reason, be comfortable with that too. Mm-hmm. No is a complete sentence. It's your money. And so if it's no, I love you, no. I'm sorry. No. End of conversation. That's completely fine, too. But we also have to know the people in our lives and what the best way it is to relate to them. So sometimes you need a reason, and sometimes it's like, nope, end of story. Bye.
Thank you.
I hope that helps.
That was very helpful.
Yes.
Hi. Thank you, Tanya, for such an enriching conversation. I would love to hear your thoughts on retirement planning, and the importance of, you know, having a 401k, if we should be contributing, and how often, if we are, should we be reallocating our portfolio? Because, you know, especially as a millennial, we're always hearing that there may not be any Social Security. Mm-hmm. It's very important that, you know, we save for retirement. Gone are the days of pensions. And so, you know, with rising healthcare costs, student loan debt, and just rising costs all around, it's hard to really justify saving for retirement when it's so far out. But I'd just love to hear your thoughts on the importance of that.
Yeah, so the way my brain works, and I'm so obsessed with finances and money, is that this morning when I was in the shower, I was thinking about pensions. I was literally like, you know, pensions. Honestly, I was like, you know, it's a lot of us do not have access to pensions the way that our parents and our grandparents had. Because I think about my money story, I think about my grandfather and what he left behind. And he worked for Wonder Bread and ended up being able to set my grandmother did not have to work. And he was a truck driver for Wonder Bread and was able to care for a family of five, which is, it's almost impossible. And he lived in Queens, New York. Try to do that now. You can't even care for a family of one, as a, you know, in New York City at this time with, on the salary that he was for a family of five. So it's very different. And retirement planning is not optional. It is essential because a lot of us, when I think of Social Security and even before, you know, my parents were talking about them retiring, Social Security was kind of the icing on the cake. It was like, okay, we did what we were supposed to do financially and like we get this additional money. But I didn't realize that individuals relied on it until I worked for at the YWCA of Brooklyn. I was a coordinator of community initiatives there, creating programming for women throughout New York City. And we had affordable housing at our unit. And I had residents, our rent there was, it was on a scale, but we had some people and their rent was, you know, $675 and their Social Security was $770. And that was their only income. And they had to figure out how they were going to buy their medications, how they were going to eat, how they were going to get around based on that $100 they had set aside. And these were women who were doctors, lawyers, attorneys, actresses, and so forth, but they hadn't set aside money for a retirement. And so life comes at you a lot quicker than a lot of us realize. I didn't, you know, I'm like, wow, I'm closer to retirement than I was to getting started in my career. And so it is important the first job that you have or the first opportunity that you have to contribute to your workplace 401k. If you don't have a workplace 401k, then walk into your local bank or your banking institution and find or contact someone, call them and find out what retirement options they have available and how you can make it automatic and easier for you to contribute something. And I say start with something, but the goal is to build up from there. The goal is to contribute enough so that you can reach your target. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm a financial educator. So I often advise people go in and sit with someone, determine how much you're actually going to need and want in retirement, and then add a little bit to that. Because, you know, the cost of living continues to rise, and it's just more expensive to exist these days. And so find out how much money you should have and what you should be contributing monthly towards that. And then from there, also diversify. So it's not one of the things you set and forget. I don't think that a 401k is enough. I honestly don't. I don't think that, you know, just contributing to your 401k. I was reading an article about 401k millionaires, and there's quite a few people who have $1 million. And their 401k now is an unprecedented amount of millennials who have $1 million in their 401k. But I think that you should also diversify your portfolio. And if you're at that point, start investing, start finding other ways. I purchased my first business because it was something else that I wanted. I looked at that as an opportunity to create more income and some sort of retirement planning for myself. So it is diversify the portfolio. And then also, you want to rebalance based on your time horizon, which is how much time you have from now when you started investing to how much time you have when you plan to retire, but then also based on your life. So you have a child, things change. Maybe you need to rebalance then. Maybe you're expecting to, you know, your costs to increase. So maybe you want to become a little more aggressive in your risk, or maybe you become more comfortable and confident with investing and you're okay getting a little more aggressive, or maybe you want to pull back and become a little more conservative. So I'd say based on your time horizon, you want to readjust your portfolio, but based on life events as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll go back right here. Oh, we have one over here. Let's start right here.
Hi, I love what you said about your financial security being a gift to your son. I'm just wondering, do you have any tips and tricks on how to teach our children financial responsibility?
We're always teaching when it comes to children, and that question is an important one because we're leading the next generation. And so you teach your children, you could buy a workbook, you could buy, you know, them a little piggy bank, you could help them save and so forth, but what you do teaches your children more about money than what you say. What you're doing is a valuable lesson to them and how you're managing money and how you're relating to money. Are you stressed about money? Or are you relating that stress to them? Or are you just letting them know life costs money? I remember I played sports in elementary school, and I was also a Girl Scout. and I wanted to go to Girl Scout camp, and I also wanted to play sports. I wanted it all. I was like, Mom and Dad, we can do it all. We're rich. I know we are. And my mom sat me down, and she showed me. She said, okay, these are our bills. This is how much we spend every month. This is how much this costs. This is how much that costs. This is how much this costs. This is how much we have left over afterwards. This is how much your Girl Scout camp costs compared to our light bill. Your Girl Scout camp is more than our light bill. This is just sitting me down and involving me in the financial process was really important. So involving your children in the financial process and demonstrating good money habits and a good relationship with money, working to reframe your own relationship with money and being mindful of how you communicate with them about money. So when you're in the store and they want something, it doesn't necessarily have to be, we can't afford that, because that can also trigger a certain experience when it comes to money. And as soon as they can afford it, they'll always try to buy it when they get older. It could be, we're choosing to spend our money on something differently today. We're choosing to spend our money on food today that will support us over the coming weeks. So being mindful of how you communicate with them about money, and then also inviting them to manage their own money, inviting them. So if you get an allowance or you get you get birthday money, okay, we're going to set aside a certain amount of this for savings, and then you can spend the rest of this. So inviting them to be active in the money management process. And I know one of the best things that my parents did for me was they required me to work in high school, and I paid for my lunch. Once I got to a certain point, my parents said, okay, you have to budget for your lunch. We're not paying for that anymore. You have to budget for your college applications because you know that that's coming. It's about just teaching them how to manage money and balance for their priorities. And so it's incremental, but the very first thing is your relationship with money and what you're teaching them and showing them about money, and then inviting them into your own money management process and allowing them to handle money themselves. And another thing that one of my colleagues showed me, or one of my colleagues in personal finance, she works with children, that I really enjoyed was, rather than teaching her kids or teaching children about giving them an allowance, she rewarded them for creating solutions. And so instead of saying, okay, it's task oriented, you swept the floor, you swept the floor and put your clothes away and so forth, I'm going to reward you for that. If she would give them a different problem or a different solution that they had to come back with a case study for or a report for, and they actually were rewarded for creating solutions, because it also teaches people to be creative instead of task oriented, and it teaches children to come up with solutions, which when we think about the people who are the creators and makers in our society, it is those who are able to solve problems and create solutions. So also thinking about how we reward them and how we provide them, allowance money. Yes.
Hi, my name is Heather, and I want to thank you for your time today for this really great conversation. So my question is about investing. How do you go about getting the confidence to start investing? Because people to me say, oh, you should be investing, but I'm like, I'd rather just put in my savings account. So how do you go about making the risk benefit decision?
Okay, and let me ask a question. How many other people in here are kind of nervous to start investing? Okay, all right, so you're not alone. That is a common, and they always release these studies where they say that women are, women don't invest, or men are nervous to invest too. Let me tell you guys, men are nervous when it comes to investing, and they question whether they're doing it right as well. And so let me ask you a question. What is one of the hardest things you've ever done?
So I got a PhD, and that was hard.
Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. I'm really happy you asked this question, though, too, because some people think that you have to have a certain level of knowledge or intelligence in order to be comfortable or confident with managing your money. And I applaud you for, the vulnerability, and that, even at a PhD level, some of us still have questions and a lack of confidence when it comes to certain financial decisions. So I hope that people are realizing that it doesn't matter necessarily how intelligent you are. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. And you have to, it's starting. The hardest thing, most of us, we've all done something hard, and we've all experienced something that was hard, and we had to get started. We had to test the waters or test it out. So there are a lot of robo-advisors now. So what we call a robo-advisor is the apps that you can download that kind of cut out the middle person so that you can start investing on your own. I say set aside a small amount. whether it is $5, $10, one of my favorite programs, you can contribute as little as $5 on a regular basis. And I just have a regular deduction into that account. And then you just start investing that money, because a lot of them have educational tools on them. There's another, I know Fidelity was a sponsor here, and Fidelity has a great educational platform as well. But you just start small. Start small, work with an advisor, definitely talk to a financial advisor for your larger sums, because they're going to know what you need to do. But I think it's as important for you to understand what's happening with your money and for you to educate yourself about what's happening with your money. And you can start with those small amounts. So I call it my play money. So I'd be like, okay, I'm putting $50 here every week, and I'll just, you know, I'll invest that and see how it works, and just determine what returns or what's giving me the best return for my money, and that way I can teach myself. So I recommend that you start small with small amounts, utilizing the tools and apps available to you, and then you start to build your confidence. You're like, oh, okay, this money is growing. Now I'm confident in putting more money here and more money here and more money here, and now you're investing for yourself, and you're also investing with the help of your financial advisor, so you have your money growing in different places. So that's is getting started and starting small. And some of us, you know, need to learn everything. And so take advantage of the tools and resources out there. Again, as I said, Fidelity has a great channel on YouTube where they just educate you about financial basics. I taught a investing class that's totally free on Brit and Co. It's a website, a crafting website, and a lifestyle website. But I taught a free investing class with a financial partner on that you can go sign up for. You can send me a message on my DM. And I can send that link to anyone who's interested in that as well. But educating yourself and just getting out there and starting small.
Thank you.
Oh, and working with an advisor, working with someone who knows what they're doing, so you're more confident. Yes. I have 5 minutes, so I think I have time for two more questions. So you.
Cool. Hi, Tanya. I'm Kat. Thanks for your time today, and also thanks to everyone for sharing today. I really
yes.
appreciate it. So my question is technically jumping off of Heather's. Which is essentially, I'm also a big saver. Like, that's what happens when your dad was a CPA. But I'm now at the point where I want to start looking for financial advisement and then also technically investments. So what are some tips that you have for things that I should look for in either a financial advisor or making investment decisions?
That's a really good question. I think that's probably like one of the good closing questions. So when you're looking for a financial advisor, you definitely want to make sure that they're licensed and reputable. So you want to do your research. You can go to a few different websites to check their credentials. But what I also recommend is asking the people in your lives first. Ask them who is managing their money, if they have a financial advisor that they like working with, and if they would recommend them. And then you want to do your research on anyone they suggest. And then interviewing people. Just because someone's a financial advisor doesn't mean they're your financial advisor. It doesn't mean that their philosophies will identify with you. It doesn't mean you'll feel comfortable giving them your money. It doesn't mean that you'll feel comfortable having financial conversations with them. And you want to make sure you feel comfortable having conversations with them, and that you don't just... Some of us are looking for different things. Like, I want to feel like a family member. My financial advisor, he sends me like photos of him and his family, and we put them on our refrigerator. And so you want to, you know, it depends on what's important to you, but make sure that you give yourself a few options. I'd say at least three options. Don't just go with the first person. But then also understand that you're not limited to the traditional financial advisor anymore. Elvest is a company that I really like, and they have options, and you can reach out to them, and you can be matched with someone who can help you manage your money. Your banking institution that you go to, they have financial advisors there, or you can call in and speak to someone who is licensed in your state and can help you. And so there are a variety of ways, but really do your research and don't go with the first person. Interview people to make sure they're a good fit for you, because there's not a limit to the financial advisors out here, but there's a limit to you.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thank you. So this is my time. I have really enjoyed talking to you all about money. I hope that I have helped you rethink about money in your relationship, and that you ask yourself those three questions the next time you buy something. Thank you so much.